wonderful people. You have just tuned into yet another episode of the First Generation Professionals Podcast. My name is Sofia Banuelos, and I am absolutely thrilled to be with you all today. In this episode, we have had the honor of speaking with the incredible Ben Campos, a trailblazer who has not only paved the way for himself, but also for his family and uplifts everyone he encounters along the way. Without giving too much away, I had the privilege of speaking with a man who deeply understands the challenges that come with being a first-generation student. Despite those obstacles, though, Ben has carved out a powerful path of his own. Now firmly established in the field of digital forensics and information systems, he continued to break barriers and inspire others along the way. With no further ado, everybody, let's go ahead and dive right into it. With that being said, I would love to hear your introduction, Ben.
Yeah, so I guess I can kind of start at the beginning, right? So I'm originally from San Diego, California. I'm actually from Chula Vista, which is a city in San Diego County. It's about like 10 minutes away from downtown San Diego. It's also about 10 minutes north of the Mexico border, so really, really far south. Yeah, I mean, Chula Vista is known for Tacos del Gordo. It's like a really popular taco shop in the area. So I actually grew up like right around the corner from there. Born and raised in San Diego. I went to Chula Vista High School. And then when I graduated, of course, I went to Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo. So that is about like 6 hours north of San Diego, which was awesome, right? It was cool to go away to college and for it to be close enough that I could also visit when I wanted to. But I studied business administration. I had a concentration in information systems. So from there, a really good opportunity fell in my lap. I started my career at Deloitte doing digital forensics. And so that's currently what I do now. And so now I work at EY. I've been at EY for about going on, I think, 4 years. So in total, I have about 8 years of working experience.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. Just for our viewers, would you mind talking a little bit about what digital forensics means?
Yeah, of course. Definitely something that I feel like I have my elevator pitch down now because everybody hears me say digital forensics and they're like, I have no idea what that is, right? Like they just get a blank stare, which is totally fair. Like I had no idea what digital forensics was until I started doing it. And a lot of it was on the job training for me as well. So digital forensics is pretty much a area within cybersecurity. So I work at EY, which is a consulting company, right? And we do projects for other companies. So our clients typically come to us and they say, hey, we need help, you know, performing an investigation, an internal investigation. So for example, let's say an employee is stealing data or they're committing some sort of fraud and any evidence could be found on their computer, we would come in and pretty much collect that data and do any analysis that can help us, you know, find evidence that can support the investigation. So I always like to compare it to, you know, a detective when they look at a crime scene, they're trying to find evidence with like fingerprints or, you know, a weapon or something like that. We typically look at digital devices. So whether that's your computer, your phone, your email. These devices obviously track so much data and have so much information on them. So a lot of, you know, a lot of things can be found on these devices that can pretty much like be used as evidence in an investigation.
Oh, wow. Okay, I didn't know the extent of that. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not like, you know, CSI or anything. A lot of people, whenever I say that, people are like, are you a cop? Like, what's going on? So, I mean, law enforcement does do digital forensics, obviously, for a lot different kinds of cases. We work more in like a corporate setting, right? So think about like HR investigations or, you know, fraud, things like that. Nothing really, you know, no murder cases or anything like that. But yeah. I mean, digital forensics is used in those kind of situations as well.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And you also mentioned that this career kind of just fell in your lap. I was wondering what you meant by that and how that came to be.
Yeah, definitely. So I, like I mentioned, my concentration was in information systems. And which is a really cool field, right? Because it's kind of like the balance, middle ground between a business degree and something like computer science. So it is a little bit more technical. I took some great classes, and I pretty much had, you can take information systems careers in a lot of different ways. So you can go be like a database developer. You can be like a systems analyst, a lot of different things. So when I was at Cal Poly, I learned SQL very well. And I had a job on campus that was focused on developing databases. And so I had a lot of hands-on experience that I was able to spin into, you know, just talking to recruiters and mentioned this job that I had on campus. And so Deloitte reached out to me and they said, oh, we really need somebody that knows SQL pretty well. And so they brought me on board. Funny enough, like I remember talking to the recruiter from Deloitte a few months before that happened. And they flat out told me like, oh, you know what? I don't think your grades are high enough to like interview at Deloitte, you know, which is, it's just funny how it kind of tables turned. And a few months later, they reached out to me with a job offer. It again kind of fell into my lap. I didn't study, you know, digital forensics. I did have a cybersecurity class, which was a good introduction, right? But everything that I know now, I learned on the job.
Wow. Wow. Literally that everything happens for a reason. That's so
right. Definitely. Yeah. And I mean, I'm definitely grateful for that on campus job that I had, right? Because I remember when I was a sophomore and a junior, I really struggled with finding an internship, right? Mm-hmm. You go to these career fairs and it's overwhelming. It's, you know, you're trying to just find the right opportunity for you. And unfortunately for me, that didn't happen. So being able to have this hands-on technical experience at my on-campus job, it just definitely opened a lot of doors for me as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And what motivated you to pursue information systems? Was this something you already had an interest in, or?
Yeah, so pretty much I decided to go into business just because I knew it was a pretty good degree to go into, right? Like typically there's a good return on investment on your degree. And obviously being a first generation college student, like money is important, right? So definitely, I think that went into it. I like the versatility of career paths that like business offers as well. And mm-hmm. once I got to college, I actually, at first I wanted to be an accounting major. Honestly, I couldn't tell you why. I think one day I probably just heard the word accounting and I was like, wow, that sounds cool. I want to do that. But once I got to college, you know, I got to take, the way that Cal Poly does it is you come in as like an undeclared business major mm-hmm. and then you take introduction courses and different majors, or concentrations rather. So for example, you could go into accounting, finance, marketing, and then information systems. So I took my first accounting class and I was like, wow, I am here. This is not what I want to do in the long run. So then I discovered information systems, which for me was awesome, right? Like I've always been really interested in technology and computers. And pretty much like the more I learned about it, I just realized that this is what I wanted to work in, you know, compared to the other concentrations.
And that actually, you set me up perfectly for my next question, because it actually inquires of you being a first generation student, how did that influence any of the choices? And you mentioned that being a business major, it was essentially a safe degree as a first gen student. So was there any other factors that contributed to the decisions you've made during your undergrad that led you here?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I mentioned, definitely it was a safe degree for me to take. Mm-hmm. And of course, right, like I think when you're a first generation college student and you might come from a circumstance similar to me, right, where, you know, I grew up in a low income family. My parents didn't go to college. They didn't have, you know, white collar office jobs. Yeah. It was very different, pretty much like the aspirations that I wanted for myself, right? Unfortunately, I was never really very good at math. Otherwise, I would have done something like, you know, engineering or statistics or something else, right, within the STEM field. But I really enjoyed like my experience as a business major. Being a first gen college student was tough, right? And mm-hmm. that definitely did influence a lot of decisions that I made throughout college. Definitely, you know, I had multiple jobs when I was in college. Trying to just kind of pay for myself. Of course, my parents tried to help me out the best that they could, but it definitely wasn't enough, right? So I had to work on campus. I had multiple jobs. Another, I guess, big factor or big decision as a result of being you know, from a low-income family is that I chose to go to Cal Poly because it was a more affordable school compared to other schools that I maybe dreamt of going to, right? So when I was in middle school, my dream school was UCLA. And I was like all about it. I was like, okay, I want to go to, you know, go to the UCLA football games. And pretty much once I was a senior and it was time to apply to colleges, I really started looking at the price tag. And it's like, oh man, it's like $40,000 a year, right? I would imagine now in 2025, it's even much more expensive than that. But so yeah, Cal Poly was relatively affordable because it's still part of like the CSU system. So yeah, just I would say that definitely kind of also influenced me to go there, just knowing that it was a lot more affordable for myself. And yeah, thankfully I was able to get some financial aid. I definitely took on student loans as well, but you know, thankfully made it through and I'm in a better position now.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that these challenges are kind of, or quite unique, honestly, to a specific student demographic, of course. So would you say that you've gained skills along the way that sometimes other students would not have been able to gain? So this can be time management or just pushing yourself the extra mile, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I guess this is also important context to kind of like my experience at Cal Poly. So in Chula Vista, you know, it's majority Mexicans, right? Like I would say a high population of Chula Vista is Mexican or Latino. We have a lot of, you know, Filipinos and Black people as well. But when I went to Cal Poly, you know, it's a predominantly white institution, right? So we're talking maybe around 15% Hispanic in the student body. I think the Black population of students at Cal Poly was in like the 2%, you know, something like that's very, very drastic from the environments where I grew up in, right? Another maybe not so fun fact about Cal Poly is that there are more students at that school from the top 1% than there are students but that are above the poverty line, right? So as you can imagine, really, really big difference. And I think that definitely played a role in, you know, when I went to Cal Poly, how I fit into the school and just, you know, trying to navigate my way through it, find people that I related to. And of course, that was a big, big learning experience. So going back to your question, right, I think one of the things that I learned was just how to get out of my comfort zone and navigate those tough situations. And, you know, like I wouldn't trade my experience in the world. Of course, in that moment, parts of it were tough. You know, it's hard to balance, you know, having an on-campus job with being social and making friends and also balancing, you know, the academics aspect of it, which is obviously very important in college as well. And so, yeah, I mean, I obviously there were a lot of students that didn't have to go through that and they could just focus on school and they could focus on, you know, the extracurricular parts of it, but they didn't have to, you know, work a closing shift at Chick-fil-A where, you know, I worked when I was at Cal Poly. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a different layer of, you know, time management, like you mentioned, balancing these different responsibilities. And of course, knowing that there really isn't a plan B, right? You know, I need to graduate college to be able to, you know, advance and create a better opportunity for myself and for my family. I, you know, my dad's not a CEO. And then if I accidentally, you know, don't make it in college or drop out, I can find a job elsewhere. So yeah, definitely. Sorry, I know I threw a lot out of you there, but yeah, definitely just a lot of layers to it.
Yeah, there's no need to apologize because yet again, Ben, you set me up for kind of the way that I wanted to go in. And the next question.
I'm just throwing you alley-oop after alley-oop, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And the next question was actually regarding joining the workforce. So you mentioned navigating tough situations. So how was your experience understanding? And how would you say that you were able to do this, of course, at Cal Poly, but also navigating the workforce post-grad in EY or any other job that you've had?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a learning experience as well, right? And a huge adjustment. So another thing I forgot to mention, so now I currently live in Chicago. So when I started my career at Deloitte, I did move from you know, from, well, I guess once I graduated from Cal Poly, I moved to Chicago and I started my career here. So again, right, we're talking multiple life transitions all at once, you know, moving to a new city without really knowing anybody. I didn't know a single person when I moved out to Chicago. Of course, like graduating from college and joining a workforce and having a full-time job, a lot of adjustments. So yeah, I would definitely say, you know, it's a learning experience. You definitely, a lot of things I had to learn regarding office culture, right? Of course, small things as to like how to dress like a professional, right? And you know, making sure that I fit in that way, but also how I carried myself and presented myself in the office, right? In a way, having to, for lack of better words, like masking who I was to try to fit in better or to like play it safe, right? And I think this is a big issue that people that come from situations like I came from kind of struggle with, is like the imposter syndrome that comes with, you know, navigating the workforce, right? Even though I had a degree and I, you know, obviously interviewed for this job and I'm qualified for this job, it's, you know, those little seeds in your mind that are like, oh, what if I don't really belong here? Or, you know, I'm not smart enough to succeed in this environment. And of course, right, it takes time. Like it takes time to build that confidence and, you know, kind of build that experience up and, you know, just being confident in the workplace as well, right? A lot of it revolves around just learning things in your job and picking up on those skills. Because once you, you know, start getting more reps in and start learning new skills, then you can build confidence in yourself, you know, and you know that you bring something valuable to the table, which when you're starting off, right, maybe you don't really feel that way.
Absolutely. I love how you mentioned the hidden curriculum and just imposter syndrome in general. And I kind of want to mainly target the hidden curriculum regarding like knowing what business casual attire is, professional attire, how people expect, honestly, students, kids to know how to email professionally, craft your own resume, how to build your own network, especially as a first generation college student, because we don't really have that foundation of how to navigate that in college or post-grad, especially if individuals don't have a job. So with that being said, do you feel as if you were equipped with the appropriate resources to succeed in and after university?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say yes for the most part. And I'm very grateful to about that. So when I was at Cal Poly, I definitely tried to seek out as many resources that I could regarding, you know, like career workshops and resume workshops and how to interview professionally and, you know, like etiquette dinners, things like that were, you know, of course, like so foreign to me, right? Like I had never been in a business dinner setting before where it's like, oh, I know which utensil to use when and whatnot. And to be honest, I probably still don't really know how to do that. But yeah, I mean, these things that were, like I mentioned, foreign to me, but there was just a lot of resources available to me at Cal Poly, right? And that one recommendation that I would do to any student that kind of finds himself in that position as well is just seek out those resources, because they exist on campus for a reason. Mm-hmm. And majority of the times they're underutilized, right? There might be workshops that have one or two people attending because not enough students knew about them. So yeah, I would definitely encourage people to seek those out. You know, a big part of being a first-gen college student is being resourceful, right? So, and that's something that's you're going to take with you into your full-time job after college. Life is fortunately an open book test in majority of cases. So sometimes the answers are available somewhere. You just got to find them. And yeah, I mean, something that you mentioned about the hidden curriculum, right? That's a pretty cool term. I've actually never heard about that. But yeah, right. Like my job as a consultant, a lot of it relies on client interaction. So that's, you know, sending professional emails, being able to write good quality memos, and, you know, a lot of these, I guess, like risk management and quality, just like things you have to do to make sure that the work product that you're making is high quality. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, a lot of that is new to you, right? Like there's really no way to, even if you do go to a workshop on how to write professional emails, there's a big difference between learning that in like a classroom setting compared to once you're in the office and you have to do those things, right? And so, yeah, I mean, definitely not having like an internship experience at a big company, I didn't have that opportunity to learn that early on. So it really was kind of sink or swim in that kind of setting.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you said being resourceful, because all of these resources are on campus. And like you said, even at CSU Channel Islands, maybe one or two people show up. Understanding that, of course, you have to seek these resources out yourself, but sure, also acknowledging that you don't have to do it alone. And that's kind of where like networking comes, and also getting your own mentors, which leads me to my next question. Did you have any mentors, or were there any professors or mentors during your time in undergrad?
Yeah, so looking back, that's another thing that I kind of wish I would have done differently, is taking advantage of the opportunities to get to know my professors more closely in a one-on-one setting. Mm-hmm. Again, right, like your professors are there to help you out because they want to see you succeed, right? And because of that, they always have like open door policies. They have these study hours, right, where you can come in and ask them questions, or sorry, office hours, not study hours. But yeah, so that's something that maybe I wish I would have done differently, because in that moment, I was intimidated to go up to my professors, right, and ask them questions and ask them like, hey, tell me about your experience. So yeah, I mean, obviously professors are a good mentor, or a good way to like get some mentorship while you're in college. Thankfully for me, I mean, I found mentors in different places, right? Like I mentioned, I had on-campus jobs, and a lot of times my mentors were, you know, like my supervisors at these jobs or my managers. And I also, when I was in college, I was part of like a co-ed business fraternity, Delta Sigma Pi. And honestly, that was pretty cool, because I got to meet some of the older students in that group who were kind of going through it, right? So when I was a freshman, they were interviewing for jobs, or they were, you know, like applying to jobs, and just kind of getting their experience and their feedback as to like what they were going through really helped me out and for that. But yeah, I mean, Cal Poly also did have like a formal mentorship programs as well. So through like the College of Business, you could apply to get like a peer mentor, or there was also this program where it was like retired professionals that would volunteer their time at Cal Poly to be like formal mentors. So I did go through that program, and I did meet with like a mentor for a few times. Unfortunately, it wasn't like a great relationship that we built out, but some of my friends, right, like I actually went to his wedding last year, and his professional mentor was at his wedding, right? Mm-hmm. So there's just, again, like finding these resources on campus and off campus, and just obviously having a mentor is very, very important. And, you know, just being able to learn from other people's experiences, like that's something that you definitely need to be able to succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. Like seeing what fits you and what works best with you. And it seems like your on-campus jobs and your supervisors were just so helpful. And you mentioned a fraternity, you said?
Yeah, so this was a co-ed business fraternity. Of course, right, maybe not exactly what people think about when they think of like a fraternity or sorority, but definitely was a great experience. I mean, everything that I learned aside, like they had like also opportunities to like get your resume reviewed by other people in the fraternity, or again, like these workshops that I mentioned. But besides that, I mean, they gave me some of my closest friends that I had throughout college, a lot of which I still keep in touch to this day. So yeah, definitely really, really important to, you know, find your tribe, which again, I mentioned that it's difficult for a lot of people where, you know, especially like at a predominantly white institution where majority of people do not come from the same background as you. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely I'm grateful that I was able to, you know, participate in extracurriculars and clubs. You know, I was part of like the Hispanic Business Association. Oh. Now I believe it goes by a different name, but you know, just having like those kind of settings where you could go and again, it's like a smaller setting with people that you might relate to on a closer level, and just being able to form good relationships with them.
Absolutely. The Hispanic Business Association, was that like a club or a specific organization established at Cal Poly?
Yeah, it's a club at Cal Poly. It was HBSA, so I guess I missed the student association in that. I believe there was like different chapters at other schools, but at least at Cal Poly, it was weekly or biweekly. We would just meet up and do an activity, or sometimes we would like invite a professional to come in and talk about, their experience at their company. A lot of it was definitely recruiting based, I also was part of like the Information Systems Association, and they would have a guest speaker every week, and it was, somebody from Google talking about their experience and, also like putting out any job opportunities that they had, or if they were hiring for an internship or something like that. But yeah, there was, I think Cal Poly was a very, thankfully we had a really good relationships with a lot of those companies, so they definitely had a big presence on campus.
And would you say that these experiences that you've gained contributed to your personal development, but also your professional development?
Yeah, definitely both. For example, right, when these professionals would come into these meetings and speak about their experience, it was also really cool to kind of visualize what other opportunities that are out there, right? There's so many jobs available that sometimes it's hard to really visualize everything that you can do. And I think, looking back to growing up, definitely is something that I didn't have available, right? Like my dad worked full time as like a food server, so it was hard for me to visualize, the day-to-day jobs of a consultant or somebody that works in marketing. It's like I had no idea what they were doing. So it was really cool to get these people to come in and talk about their experience, and it's like, oh, I do such and such role at this company. And it's like, first of all, I didn't even know that industry existed, right? Like I didn't know that, for example, like one of the companies that I interviewed with in college was E&J Gallo, which is like a big winery. It's one of the biggest independent wineries in the country. And it's like, wow, I never realized that a company like that would need, information systems professionals, yet they were hiring for those roles, right? So yeah, definitely professional development, personal development. Of course, it's always good to go in and meet other people and be in these settings with people that are interested in the same things that you are, or kind of have these same aspirations. So, definitely like a lot of people in my information systems classes were the same group, right? So I had the privilege of being in a lot of classes with them and just getting to know them better. And again, something that I couldn't have done if I didn't participate in these, clubs on campus.
Absolutely, building each other up with the community that you have. And would you say that you found it challenging to put yourself out there to network with these professionals that would come in, or honestly just building a network with anyone who you're able to?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from what I recall, like making friends in college is always a lot scarier, right? Because you really have to put yourself out there. So yeah, I mean, definitely knowing how to build your network is something that's crucial, even, to this day, right? A lot of what the business world is just being able to form good relationships with others, whether, that's your supervisors, your peers, the people that you supervise, or people that could be potential clients, for example, at EY. Building a network is always really important, and yeah, it's something that takes practice, right? For example, like I remember going to when I first so this is a funny story, but when I was a freshman in college, I started super motivated. I was like, I'm gonna go to this career fair and I'm gonna kill it. I'm gonna get this internship. And so I remember like going out and buying like a super cheap suit, and I wore it to the career fair. And then just going through the process, everybody turned me down, right? Because it was like, oh, we don't really have internships for freshmen, or oh, we're not really hiring for these positions. And I remember I took that so personally, and but look, and definitely prevented me from going to career fairs like the years after that, because I was kind of intimidated by that, that rejection. But of course, like it's practice, right? Like you go out there and you try to meet people, just learn about these different companies, and these are all things that only help you out in the long run, because by the time you are a senior, then you'll have experience with, getting these these people at these companies and talking to people at career fairs, and just, again, having that confidence in yourself when you are interviewing for these jobs. But yeah, I mean, and on another level, just for like at Cal Poly, for example, like, yeah, I mean, it definitely takes time, like I mentioned, to build your tribe. There's, you know, thousands of people on this college campus, and sometimes it just, it takes time to find like your people, right? And that's the beauty of it, right? Like in college, you get to reinvent yourself, or you get to focus on these things that you love. And there's a lot of people that will have the same, you know, common ground as you.
Yeah. And then would you have any advice for our viewers on how to establish meaningful relationships with their peers, with faculties, or just with professionals, whether that's overcoming barriers or just getting out there?
Yeah, I mean, I would, step one is definitely like authenticity, right? Like at the end of the day, you want to form relationships based on who you truly are and what your values are. So if you're true to yourself, you're authentic to like, you know, what your values are, what you believe in, it's much easier to build those relationships as opposed to, you know, pretending to be somebody you're not and then, you know, trying to build relationships off of like a facade, right? So yeah, I would definitely say that's one. Yeah, I mean, I think I've definitely covered it a little bit earlier, right? But just taking advantage of these opportunities to join, you know, the office hours and going to speak to your professors and taking the time to put yourself out there, joining these extracurriculars, joining these, you know, club sports. There's just a lot of opportunities on campus to get to know other people. And again, right, the beauty of networking is, at least from a professional standpoint, is all of these people that you kind of grow up with in college, they go on to have, you know, great careers at different companies, right? So you never know who you're going to run into 5 years from now, or who might message you on LinkedIn and say like, oh, hey, I remember that when we were in college, you used to talk about this, like, I'm hiring for that now, you know, would you be interested in coming over to my company? Yeah, definitely building those relationships just goes a long way. So, but again, I would say authenticity. And I guess to summarize my second point, just putting yourself out there, and, you know, it's scary. It's always scary, especially like I mentioned before, the feelings of like, ooh, what if I get rejected? Or what if, you know, like I go to this club and I don't really hit it off the way I thought I was going to, right? You're never going to know unless you do it. So might as well just do it.
Absolutely. I love that you touched base on authenticity. This is the first time I've ever heard it, because especially like you mentioned, imposter syndrome, we don't feel as if we belong in a space. Therefore, we kind of try to fit ourselves into what we think we should be like. And just being your authentic self, you know, we deserve to be in that space, and we got there for a reason. So thank you for even touching base on authenticity. And then that brings us into our next portion. So of the interview. So now we're going into first generation related questions. And number one, how did you overcome challenges as a first gen student? And what strategies or support systems did you use to succeed?
Yeah, I mean, I apologize if I've already kind of covered some of these things earlier, but yeah, I mean, definitely college is a very difficult time if you have no kind of experience going through it before, right? And a lot of times it's having, you know, a parent that went through this, and they can help you navigate, you know, what the college, you know, environment is like. So yeah, for me, I think I was able to get through it by, again, like finding my communities of people in different places that just kind of helped me, you know, help ground me when these challenges did pop up. So like I mentioned, you know, I had on-campus jobs. I was trying to, you know, participate in these extracurricular activities and then balance the academics portion of it. So one confession that I do have is there was times throughout college where my grades struggled, right? So, you know, there was times where I got a D in a class and it's like, oh man, I have no idea how I'm ever going to like bounce back from this. So there's a lot of challenges that are going to pop up. But, you know, just staying motivated, right? Like all of these challenges are only helping shape you as a person and as a professional. So these are all learning experiences, right? Like every time that you hit a point where it's like, man, I think this might be rock bottom for me, like you can only go up from there. So Yeah, I would say definitely again, like participating in these extracurriculars, getting to meet other people, a big part of it, right? And I'm thankful that I always had like my close family and friends back home to kind of support me from afar, right? So if I was ever going through something, you know, I could always reach out to them, give them a call, and I knew that they had my back, even though, of course, like they're not there with me, right? And they have no idea what I'm going through on the day-to-day basis, right? Or a lot of these problems are different, right, to what their problems are. I know that these people are gonna, you know, be there for me when I need them.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no need to apologize at all. If anything, like, thank you for just being so descriptive with your answers. And I actually am very excited for your answer to this. What does being a first generation professional mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And honestly, it's something that means a lot to me, right? It's a big part of my identity, just because of, again, like I mentioned, like the struggles that I went through being a first generation student from a low income family and going through these problems. You know, it's of course like it struggles, but at the end of the day, they're learning opportunities, right? So it's funny because looking back when I was in college, it's like I couldn't wait to graduate college. I couldn't wait to get out of there because, you know, like I was down bad, for lack of better words, right? Like, so yeah, so it's funny, like looking back, it's like, wow, like college was such a great time for lots of different reasons, right? But when you're in the thick of, you know, the struggle, it's like you can't wait to get out of there. But just learning to like appreciate it and try to be present to like what you're going through is definitely something that's part of this experience. And yeah, I mean, even now, right, I definitely want to offer this mentorship and support to students that are going through the same things that I went through when I was in college. And, you know, definitely something that I enjoy doing, right? Like I've participated on panels through EY for like different charity organizations throughout the Chicago area. So recently I spoke on a panel for like the Chicago Baseball Education Academy. So that's just like an organization that's providing students from, you know, the South Side on, you know, how to just be better, not just athletes, but student athletes and aspire to things that are greater than them. So, you know, just doing things like this, I really enjoy because I want to give back, right? Like I know that I'm one of many students that have gone through this, and something that I've always felt is like even going back to like my high school days, right? Like I was never ever like the smartest student. There was kids that were way, way smarter than me. They were way more talented than I was. But for one reason or another, like they didn't have enough opportunities or support to reach the heights that they could have, right? Like thankfully for me, like I had high school teachers that believed in me and, you know, kind of like pushed me in the right direction. So I just, again, right, like there's a lot of flowers that could bloom if people watered them. And unfortunately, a lot of these flowers don't get watered, right? That was probably a stupid metaphor. You can cut that out. But yes, yeah, so it's, you know, there's a lot of students out there that could use that support, and that's why I feel so passionate about it. And you know, just there's other people that have gone through this that have gone out to do great things. So I definitely want to, you know, continue doing that and providing that support to others.
First off, that was a great analogy. I got what you were saying. And then secondly, it seems like you're doing such wonderful work and you're just giving back to the community. And now really the tables have turned. Instead of seeking those resources, you are that resource that people can seek. And I think that that's so wonderful to hear. And I know everybody is very grateful if they have come across your mentorship as well.
Thank you.
And yeah, so I had my own question. I was going to
Sure.
skip to the next one, but then I said my piece, so I think it'll come back. So yeah, so you've definitely experienced a lot in college. You've gone through the thick of it, like you mentioned. You've learned a lot. Like you said, you've even had some struggle in your academics because sometimes, as first generation college students who are trying to seek all of these opportunities, we don't have the privilege of just being a student. So how has this influenced your worldview and just being a critical thinker, being adaptable, and just being able to just immerse yourself within any environment?
Yeah, so one thing that I forgot to kind of, I don't think I talked about this, but so actually something that I haven't told a ton of people, but like I mentioned, right, like when I was in college, financially struggling, you have all of these different problems. Again, like not having the financial resources like does take a big toll when you are in college. And so one of actually the resources that I used while I was at Cal Poly was like their food pantry. You know what I mean? So it's like it's something that's just it's available to students that need it. Yeah. And I was one of those students. Right. So I know what it's like to, you know, be hungry, like physically and I guess like metaphorically. Right. When you're going through these things and these challenges and you just can't wait to, you know, like succeed right in the long run. And yeah, I mean, like I mentioned, coming from Chula Vista to Cal Poly, I realized how I grew up in a bubble, right? Like I guess Chula Vista and Cal Poly are two bubbles, but completely different. You know, in Chula Vista, you go to any grocery store and people will speak to you in Spanish, right? And it just kind of feels like home because, you know, it's all you've been around your whole life. And so going to this other environment, which is, you know, another very safe bubble because, you know, we're all college, it's a college town. So, you know, not a lot of, you know, poverty or anything like that going on in San Luis Obispo. But, you know, just you definitely realize that people grow up differently than you did, right? And everybody kind of has like their own life experiences that shapes them for better or for worse. Right. I'm not saying that, you know, the people that grew up super wealthy don't have any problems. Right. But it's a different set of problems. So I think definitely one of the biggest takeaways from it is just the empathy that you kind of learn how to, you know, you pick up and you learn how to relate to people that have different, you know, life situations than you do. And I think that just makes you a better person, right? Being able to relate to others, being able to empathize with what people are going through and being able to, you know, provide support or, I think that's definitely one of the things that I learned.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. That's also the first time I've heard that response. So that's an amazing way of looking at it. And then you've also mentioned before, earlier in the interview and how being a first gen is, you know, it just contributes to your entire identity. So with that being said, how did your experience as a first gen in STEM of all things shape your understanding of your own identity and cultural heritage, if it did?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, again, because of my experience and going from a place where, you know, everybody was Mexican and it was like the culture, right? Like everybody kind of ate the same food. Everybody had the same like traditions or family experiences that I did. And going away from that just definitely helps you appreciate that even more. It's like one of those things that it's like, oh, wow, I took that for granted because I never realized how cool these parts of my culture were or how special these things were. It's kind of like, you know, how I live in Chicago now. It's like, man, I wish I took San Diego weathers for granted, right? So yeah, I mean, it's just definitely your culture, your heritage, your experience, your identity is all something that you will always take with you, right? To college, to life after college, it's just who you are. And so yeah, I would say it's definitely important.
Yeah. How is Chicago weather? I've never been.
Oh man, it's cold. I mean, it's so cold. Right now it's what, like mid-May, and I think today was like 40 degrees. So yeah, it's, I mean, don't get me wrong, so summertime Chicago is absolutely beautiful. Mm-hmm. But then it's like 6 months of winter, you know. It's cold, it gets tiring after a while, but mm-hmm. Chicago's a great city though. I love living here.
Yeah. I didn't know Chicago. I thought Chicago was hot.
I mean, so yeah, I guess pick your poison. In the summertime, it's also like 90s and humid. So it goes either way.
It's two extremes.
Right, for sure. So So yeah, maybe four seasons of 70 degree weather wasn't so bad after all, right?
Exactly. We're almost done. I promise you that. You're being so descriptive. Like I'm honestly skipping over questions because like I was like, oh, Ben already answered that. I don't even need to ask that.
Gotcha. Well, that's good to hear. I also do kind of like ramble a little bit. Like my brain just processes so slow. So there might be a lot of fluff before I get to the answer. You know what I mean?
No. If
thanks
anything,
for bearing with me.
No, absolutely. I love all of these descriptive answers because we get to hear your authentic story. And honestly, that's what we want. You know, you're telling our viewers exactly what you went through, like financial hardships. And thank you for even sharing that with us. And even like struggling academically, missing your family, for example, that's something that's so much more common than I initially thought when I started these interviews. So thank you for just being so honest with us. We're very grateful for that.
Oh yeah, happy to share. So yeah, I mean, that's a good point to like anybody that's listening to this or they kind of like relate to what I said, like you're not going through this alone. Mm-hmm. And other many, many people have gone through this. And I know it seems like it's the end of the world when all of these challenges just kind of stack up on one another, but you got this, right? Like you will succeed.
Yeah. Thank you. And okay. How did your family and community react to your decision to pursue your STEM major or business degree with an emphasis in information systems?
Yeah, honestly, you can skip this one just because, like, nothing personal or nothing, but I just, like, nothing really interesting to share. I feel like my parents had no, like, feelings against it or anything like that. It's not like they wanted me to be a doctor and I wasn't or anything like that.
So they were fully on board with everything?
My parents have always been very supportive of me going to college, and I guess like made me feel like there was like not choosing college wasn't an option, mm-hmm. which I'm very thankful for, right? You know, we're talking, my mom, I think she made it to like an eighth grade level, mm-hmm. and then she got pregnant with like my oldest sister, right? So very different life experience than what I've had. And I'm just thankful that she had, you know, the vision to say like, all right, you're going to go to college and there's no debate, right? Like you have to do it. And of course, right, like I'm not saying college is the only option, right? There's a lot of other great career paths that everybody can take. You know, within cybersecurity, like I meet a ton of people that are, their first career was like being in the military and doing cybersecurity there, right? Great training programs, and they've seen a lot of awesome things as well. So yeah, a college isn't the only choice, right? But I think for a lot of people like me, it's one of the best options to, you know, put yourself in a better situation. And of course, right, like it's a gamble, or not really a gamble, it's a bet, right? Like you're making a bet on yourself that, you know, sometimes you do have to take out student loans, but you know that it's for a greater good, right? Or it's for a reason. So once you do graduate from college, you'll be, you know, just being able to take another full-time job in a otherwise situation that you wouldn't have been able to if you didn't go to college. So yeah, I guess to summarize that, just grateful to my parents for planting this seed in me and just, you know, and making sure that I did go to college.
Ben, I thought that was a wonderful answer, so I'm grateful you didn't skip it. and that actually is perfect because I had a question. So you mentioned your mom just, or your parents just planted the seed. And did you have any mentors or just support in your family to navigate first gen as a first gen student, to navigate college as a first gen student?
Yeah, to be honest, not really. I mean, so I do have an older brother that, so he actually was like the first person in my college to go to family, mm-hmm. But his experience was very different, right? Like he went to a junior college and then transferred to San Diego State. So he like stayed at home, commuted. And to be honest, like we never really talked a lot about college or what his experience was. He also is 8 years older than me. So, right, like it's a big gap, right? So when he was graduating from college, I was in middle school, I think, right? So there's just two different experiences. And unfortunately, like, you know, I have a great relationship with my brother, but we never really talked about like navigating college. And, you know, it wasn't really a resource that I had to, you know, unfortunately, nobody else in my family also went through that. So even like going back to like applying for colleges, like that's something that I'm grateful that my brother had gone through that not so long ago, because my family was aware of what was going on, right? Like, they knew what it was like to apply to colleges and what that timeline looked like. So I did have some support there. But I mean, at the end of the day, like, my parents weren't filling out the FAFSA forms like I was, you know. So again, something that maybe a lot of students, when they're applying to college, take for granted, just having parents who can guide them through that process and offer, you know, coach them through that, right? But yeah, I mean, looking back, like, not a lot of people around me had gone to college. You know, of course, like, a lot of my friends had parents that were like small business owners, or, you know, had these different like entrepreneur businesses, but for the most part, like, everybody was blue collar. Nobody had really gone through this before. So yeah, I guess a lot of it was new to me.
Thank you. Thank you for that. We're getting to the last two questions. So thank you for just being so so patient, and just again for your descriptive answers. I wanted to ask this because the list of your family is growing. So you mentioned a sister, and then you mentioned right. a brother. And so I wanted to ask, like, were there any other financial considerations that impacted your decision to go to college as a first gen student? So I know you chose Cal Poly because it's a part of the CSU system. And I wanted to ask if there was any other decisions in there within your journey as a first gen student that was tied to being a part of a big family, for example.
Let me think about this one. Yeah, I mean, I think everything pretty much associated with this, I had already kind of touched on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, definitely had a role in the career that I chose. It definitely had an impact on just how I went through college, right? And I mentioned how a lot of people in this situation don't really have a plan B, right? So it's kind of like you graduate or it's bust, right? Like, there's really no middle option. And unfortunately, right, like, that is a lot of unnecessary pressure that a lot of students kind of deal with, right? But again, it's just something that's motivation and a driver, and it definitely puts a chip on your shoulder, right? It's, you know, that this, you know, sticking through college and succeeding and finding, you know, a good career is not only for yourself, but it's also, you know, as a tribute to your family and what they've sacrificed to get you here. It's also for, you know, the next generation, right? Like, we haven't really talked about like generational wealth, right? But that's something that going to college and having a career in STEM, it can change that, right? So even though my parents were not able to, you know, start a 529 college plan for me, like, thankfully I'm in a position where I am going to be able to do that for my children and hopefully other family members. And also something I didn't mention, but I also have a scholarship fund for first generation college students. So it's only been around for 2 years. And unfortunately, a lot of it right now is privately funded, aka it comes out of my bank account. So the awards are obviously not very big. But anyways, this foundation is called the First in Business Foundation, and it's explicitly what it sounds like. So it's for first gen students interested in studying business. You know, a goal is for me is to make this into a big foundation, and I can hopefully pay for multiple students to go to college. Right now it is more of like a book scholarship, but, you know, one step at a time.
Yeah.
Again, just going back to like my metaphor is just like, I know that there's a lot of students that could thrive in these scenarios, but they just don't have enough support. And a lot of that is unfortunately financial. So if I could just, like, you know, help change one student's life, like, that's a big win for me. Right. So the person that won the scholarship the first year was a student out of Las Vegas. She's going to UNLV and she's studying finance. And, you know, like in her essay, she just talked about why she wanted to go to college to study business. And it's amazing, right? Like there's a lot of really smart people out there that have huge goals and dreams for themselves. So again, like if I can support that, that's a big win for me.
That is incredible. I am so happy you remembered that huge point. Oh my goodness. But although you said it's more of a book scholarship, anything, and I'm sure that you understand this too, like anything is better than nothing. And I'm Definitely. Sure that that girl from UNLV is so grateful for that, because now that's two less books she has to purchase.
In today's economy, that might be like one book. I'm not sure. But but yeah, no. And I mean, I know that there's a lot of companies that have all these budgets allocated to, you know, like nonprofits and charities. So that's another goal for the foundation, would be to like receive funding from these companies and hopefully create a pipeline just for, you know, like internship opportunities or job opportunities. So the girl that won it the first year, like hopefully she gets an EY job offer soon. I mean, we've been working on that. So yeah, again, so just trying to build a pipeline and hopefully get these kids some opportunities.
That is so wonderful. That is so great. Thank you for sharing that. And as we go into the last question, I wanted to ask if you could give your younger self a piece of advice. What would it be?
Yeah, I mean, definitely just be present, I would say, right? Like enjoy everything that you've gone through, like enjoy the struggle, right? Like everything that you're going through is for a reason, and there is light at the end of the tunnel, right? So of course, right, just like be present, be patient, put yourself out there. Things that I've talked about extensively during this interview, but you know, there's just a lot of learn, right? So that's another thing that I would tell my younger self, is like just never stop learning. Whether that's, you know, picking up some more technical skills or reading about a topic that's new to you, there's just every day, you know, you get an opportunity to grow as a person, even if it's only a little bit, right? But you do get that opportunity, so just never take that lightly. Like always keep moving forward.
Beautiful. Thank you, Ben. And as we leave our listeners, if your journey as a first-gen student or professional could be captured in one song, what anthem would you choose to represent the challenges, the victories, your overall perseverance for your story?
When you sent the list of questions, I was like, what if it's like Started from the Bottom by Drake or something like that? But no, that's kind of cringy. So
no, that's so good.
Or like another one that came to mind is like Dreams and Nightmares by Meek Mill. I don't know if people your generation know that song, but it's like it starts off like, I used to pray for times like this. But yeah, so I did put some thought into this one. So the answer is Love Yours by J. Cole. Again, I'm not sure if it's another song that's still popular with your generation, but yeah, you know, it just talks about, I mean, the chorus is literally like, no such thing as a life that's better than yours. And that's, you know, true, right? Like you only get one life, so you have to just enjoy it, right? The good and the bad, you know, there's beauty in the struggle. You know, all of these things that you go through shape you into the person who you are and your identity. So just appreciate it all, right? Because, you know, the things that you're going through and the challenges you're facing, it's going to help you become a more resilient person and just, you know, be able to overcome things more easier the next time around. So
and with no further ado, I will let you get back to your day.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you so much. I hope you don't mind my rambling and, you know, talking about different things. But yeah, this was a good experience. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you once again for tuning into this week's episode of the First Generation Professionals Podcast. I truly hope you enjoyed this conversation with Ben just as much as I loved recording it. It is such a gift to sit down with someone whose journey is not only inspiring, but is also deeply impactful. Ben has redefined what it means to discover your potential and to surpass it.
He is living proof that we are all are capable of reaching for the sky. And through hard work, resilience, and a heart to uplift others, Ben reminds us of the power of forging your own path and bringing others along with you. If you loved this episode, don't forget to subscribe and make sure to follow us on Instagram at firstgenprofessionals_CI to stay updated on future conversations. See you guys later.
Love yours. Love yours. No such thing. No such thing as a life that's better than yours. No such thing as a life that's better than yours.